Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories I can tell you.
It's the Final Word Daily, coming to you live from Raunchy. I'm Cameron Punsonby. I'm joined today by Daniel Norcross, as ever. These episodes are brought to you by Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City, and also, as ever, Daniel Norcross is going to run us through what happened today in 30 seconds. Go.
England won the toss and elected to bat on a pitch that was at its most spicy in the morning session. They found themselves in Akash deep, deep trouble when three wickets went down in double quick time. It couldn't have been four because it would have been the same man twice. We'll come to that later, as a bowled off a no ball was the most spectacular moment of the day. Then Joe Root played the way Joe Root often does play on slow, low wickets when he can't get under the ball to do reverse ramps, and he realised the match situation. He compiled his 10th 100 against India more than any other human being. In tandem with Ben Folkes, it got England to a position of some respectability before Folkes gave his wicket away. A tremendous knock, though, by Ollie Robinson at the end. Took England 7 wickets down, just over 300. It feels par for the course, just about, on a pitch that's playing some unusual tricks here and there, but not all the time.
I think the key in your summary there is the uncertainty we're left with. For all the talk of the pitch, for all of the one individual Ben Stokes dismissal, it's fine, it's okay. I think it's going to get faster, it's going to start to spin more. So I think England will be the happier of the two sides at the end of today. But my base level emotion leaving the 90 overs that we had today was that was really fun. That was an excellent day's cricket. The
Heretic.
Morning session in particular. I sue me. I enjoyed watching the sport I like. What else am I meant to do? I had a quite nice moment before Zach Crawley did the press afterwards, and I had a kind of very brief chat with him. I was like, that was good, wasn't it? That was an enjoyable thing to have watched. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, well, you're part of it. And that morning session, let's start at the beginning to almost go slightly in chronological order today. Just the most thrilling 25, 27, however many overs of cricket it was. Third ball of the day, Mohammad Siraj does bowl a bouncer, but it takes everyone by surprise, no least Zach Crawley, and it hits him on the gloves. Everyone goes, oh my goodness me, is this the pitch playing up? No, it was a short delivery. It was meant to be a bouncer. But because it was so lively, England's batters felt the need to attack. So there was an amazing four-ball sequence where Zach Crawley hit three fours and then the most beautiful six over mid-wicket off Mohammad Siraj. And all this was playing amongst Akash Deep having the debut of dreams. He did get Zach Crawley out in very dramatic fashion. However, he overstepped, no ball. And The weird thing about these nobles now is it's not like it used to be 7 years ago where they only checked the wickets, so you might have bowled four nobles beforehand and just didn't know. It just happened to be his first ever no ball in Test cricket, coincided with what should have been his first ever wicket. But it then moved into the most exciting over, where he dismissed Ben Duckett for actually his first wicket. He then got Ollie Pope 2 balls later, LBW, and then 2 balls after that, or 1 ball after that, he got Joe Root, not out LBW, but they reviewed and he just outside the line. It was enthralling, it was thrilling. Daniel, what did you make of it all?
I really loved watching him bowl, and it was so unusual because it was so different from what happened the rest of the day, really, because the pitch had sort of real pace and life and fun and joie de vivre in it. And you could sort of imagine, a seamer's paradise, really, because there was a serious deviation off the wicket. But I guess that's a first morning wicket, isn't it? There's a bit of moisture in it, and that's what you've got to try and get through. And England didn't really get through it. I still can't quite work out Pope's dismissal. I've watched it lots of times. And it was LBW of his second born. He'd come advancing down the wicket. And I thought for all the world that would have been going over the top. But the replay had it kind of plateauing a bit. So maybe because the pitch itself isn't as bouncy. And of course, we discovered how unbouncy the pitch was. But because there are a few cracks in it. I mean, not really serious ones. We're not talking, by the way, let's be really clear. We are not talking indoor last year. When Australia played against India, where it turned square, where Pujara was undone by an absolute monster delivery from Lyon in about 40 minutes into the match. It's not that. It's that it was low. And in that first hour, it wasn't slow and it got increasingly slow. But then I think in part it was made to look slower by the methodology that England's batters employed. So rather than lurching at the ball, folks and Root were particularly keen to play off the wicket. Anything that was slightly wide of off stump, they played off the back foot, which tends to make things look slower if the batter hits it, because you think that they've got loads of time. And if it was straight, Root especially tended to play the ball off the front foot, which, again, made it look like he was in complete control of the danger ball. But that morning session, I mean, England trying to counter-attack because they knew they were in trouble, going hard. That crawly over you've described, absolutely mesmeric stuff. And it all ended, the session ended, with that remarkable Stokes dismissal. You don't often see batters walk when they're given out LBW. Stokes just turned on his heels and departed.
I think, just quickly, before we move on, I think it was very important to notice that there, Daniel, you're once again playing into the DRS corruption brought out by the BCCI thing we were always accusing you of, and I knew that you always thought all along, but we'll just leave that to one side. I remember talking to an Indian colleague, Kartik Krishnaswamy, who was on the show earlier just before this test match, and he was saying that, weirdly, he thought England's best route to victory in this test, if it was going to be a spinning wicket, was to lose the toss and for India to bat. The Australia series last year, three of the four matches, I believe, were won by the team chasing. And it just seems to be, for that very reason you were talking about, that on the first morning, the first two sessions of day one, was actually when it was the hardest time to bat, because there was life in the surface, it was zipping around, and teams were getting bundled out in a way they weren't expecting to. Now, you'd be bonkers to win the toss and say, we'll have a bowl. No one's going to do that. And it's a massive departure from kind of, what's the word, conventional logic or like assumed knowledge. But I think England have done really well across a couple of points here, because they have been borderline spooked by this wicket the whole time. There's apps, both privately and publicly, they weren't happy with it. They were looking at it this morning and they were concerned. They were like, we need to make sure we get a bat and there's going to be a problem here. But they've been very sensible in two things that they've done. The first thing they've been sensible with was their selection, where rather than panicking and adding Dan Lawrence into the team and saying it's going to be a 200 all kind of shootout, let's get another person who could blast a 30. They went, no, we're going to pick a finger spinner who we think will suit the conditions better and keep our batting lineup as is, in Shoaib Bashir. Then today, with that Ben Stokes delivery, which was comical, it was just kind of a sign of things potentially to come in 48 hours, there is the chance to panic there. If you are Ben Folkes or you're Joe Root, in that instance, you're going, shit, that might happen to me. We need to score our runs. now. And instead, they kind of bunkered in. And I think part of that is because Joe Root is a player who wouldn't choose to bat in a certain attacking manner. And Ben Foulkes is a player who can't play in that attacking manner. So it's kind of a situation forced upon them. But as you say, the wicket got a bit, looked a bit slower. They bedded in. They were going along at 2.5 and over. And would you like a statistic, Daniel? Because I'm going to give you a statistic.
I genuinely would love a statistic.
So, in India, I believe in the last, I think since 2017, there's been 21 century partnerships. Four of the slowest 10 have come here at Ranchi, which has only hosted 3 test matches in that time, including this one. I think I've got that vaguely almost correct. So, this is a ground, this is a wicket that has lived to deceive. Here in 2017 or 16, Adam was causing a kind of diplomatic issue because it was the stitch-up of the century, and then it turned out to be a slow wicket, and a kind of Australia piled on runs and India piled on runs. And we might have the same situation here. Are we all going to look really stupid? I don't know. But it was astonishing. No, I was going to say astonishing. I was going to go too superlative about Joe Root's century. It was an excellent century. And I think, in a way, it was the most assured of the series so far. And what I mean by that is, with Jaiswal's double tons, with Ollie Pope, Shubman Gill and Ben Duckett, you didn't know what was going to happen next ball. It was exciting and riveting throughout. Joe Root was there. He was an obstacle. You knew he was going to be a presence, a solid presence throughout. And as Zach Crawley said, at the end of the day's play, he's England's best ever player. Best ever, Daniel. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I'm not going to get down that path. I mean, their best ever player was probably in both of them, I imagine.
To have ever played the sport.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly their most assured and technically gifted all-round batter. I will go with that. But, there were a whole number of reasons why I think he played the way he did, and I don't think it was in response to the criticism that he got for the way he got out in the previous test match. One of the key differences was that Bumrah wasn't available, and where he's come unstuck is the reverse swinging ball, targeting those pads, coming back into him. He struggles with that, as anybody would, because Bumrah's very, very good. The other thing that was very noticeable was that the last two test matches, nobody really talked about Root's batting in the first test match, largely because England won and it was all about Ollie Pope. That was when they batted first. In the last two test matches, they batted second, and Root has bowled about 25 overs every time. So, I mean, it was very noticeable in the last game that he actually got sort of hand cramps at one point. He hadn't been batting for any length of time. And I imagine if you're a part-time off-spinner and you're bowling as much in the heat that Joe Root was doing, that is going to be a bit discomforting and you're not going to be used to it. He didn't have that particular problem. And thirdly, he assessed that the pitch was low and slow. Now, when it's low and slow, the mileage for the reverse ramp, those kind of shots, isn't quite there because getting underneath it is devilishly difficult. So I think he just assessed the conditions and he assessed the conditions in previous games. He just didn't execute the plan that he had, or he was undone by the brilliance of Bumrah. On this occasion, he assessed the conditions and he executed it perfectly well. And it was a sublime 100. It wasn't filled with many memorable shots, a couple of nice drives. I mean, the most memorable thing about it really was his a terrific ability to judge line as well as length, because as I was saying earlier, there was a great graphic they put up on the TV showing when he went back and when he went forward, and the length of the ball wasn't hugely different, and you would always imagine that the length of the ball is going to determine whether you play off front or back foot. That is how we learn the game. But for Root, the line was a significant part of it as well. So when he had a little bit more comfort that his stumps and pads were not going to be brought into play, he allowed himself that extra time to go deeper and to try and find those little gaps, or to knock it off his pads into the onside, going deep in his crease. And that's when you see Root at his very best. It's very much like his debut, actually, when he came forward a little bit too much in the first innings of his debut, and then he sort of reined it back a bit and then got more onto the back foot. He's a quick learner. It was a great knock, but as you say, and as you said right at the beginning, I don't know if it's going to be match-defining, because I can see India wrapping up England's tail quickly tomorrow and batting all day, because there's not a lot of bite there at the moment. Of course, the ball could hit cracks and it could go low and all sorts of things may happen. But I think India, as you said, and talking to Krishna, I kind of agree, that they won't be too displeased to be batting second. They might be displeased to be batting fourth, depending on what the target is. But batting second, I think they're in with a decent chance of racking up a score.
England are in a position now where kind of runs, time is almost as valuable a currency as runs going into tomorrow. You just want to put time into the wicket so you're going to have that opportunity to bowl later in the match in the fourth and final innings. And we're saying, like, we're obviously praising Root for his innings because it was a superb innings. But England was so close. They were living very happily but very delicately for much of the afternoon session. The afternoon session, to be honest, it was reminding me of kind of spinach as a child, and you go like, I know this is good for me, but it's quite dull watching these guys like go along at two and over. And for all the talk of, again, Stokes' dismissal will be pointed to as a ball that's misbehaved, for the most part, India have got their wickets through fantastic bowling, in particular fantastic seam bowling. Even late in the day, Mohammad Siraj's delivery to get Tom Hartley was a stunning ball, wonderful bowling from him. And at the start of the day, Akash Deep was just putting together a fantastic spell. He came in, he was a surprise debut. We said on this show, everyone was reporting that it was going to be Mukesh Kumar who kind of came back into the side. And actually, Akash Deep leapfrogged his Bengal teammate, they share a state team, to make his debut. He's got an amazing story, well, a very tragic story, in that he lost both his dad and his brother within 6 months of each other a handful of years ago. His mum was here to watch him get his cap. He'd stopped playing. He wasn't going to be a cricketer. And he's had this massive, very exciting rise to the Indian national team. And once again, it turns out you could pick just the strength and depth of India, perhaps not surprisingly, wonderful, superb. It was just a great... I thought about this when I was coming into the ground yesterday, and we were driving along, and there's a ground, there's a school and a cricket pitch just beside the stadium here. And it looked like just a kind of schoolboy game. They didn't look that old, and I kind of didn't really think much of it. And then I noticed the wicketkeeper was standing miles back on this kind of scorched outfield, like hard on the elbows, hard on the knees. I went, how quick's this lad going to bowl? I saw him run in, perfect action. He actually shoved it down leg side, fell over a little bit. And the keeper was launching off over to his left, taking this amazing stunner down leg side, basically on concrete. I went, fucking hell, they could have a game as well. They'd be fine. And it was just, it's been the most wonderful series. I think I'm relieved that England have started well. I know that is my bias showing, but my bias is mainly targeted towards two all in Dharmashala and wanting a decider. It'd be the first time in 29 years that a five-match test series has gone to the fifth match at two all. Right, I think we're going to move on to the final word, Hall of Fame. Do you agree with me?
Yes, I agree. Yeah, go for it.
I've got the ad copy.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
So I've got to be ready.
I can't wait.
And also, what's the problem is I write it with my hands, and it's not great. My handwriting's got worse, I think, in my later 20s.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've noticed that,
the final word.
It seems to take you forever to read it, but it's always brilliant copy, whatever it is. It's always thoroughly engaging.
It's fucking impossible to read. Right, the final word, Hall of Fame, is brought to you, as ever, by Westfield London. Westfield Stratford City. Right. Yesterday, we talked about muscles. The kind of rippling muscles you can only get at PT Pods. Well, today we're going to talk about muscles of a different kind. Australian electronica musician Muscles and his 2007 hit Ice Cream. And if you love ice cream as much as you like tenuous links and references, that was my fault, I genuinely could not read what I wrote. And if you love ice cream as much as you like tenuous links and references meant for no one, you'll love going to Westfield Club, joining the Westfield Club. When you sign up, you can claim a free ice cream from Badiani Gelato. Ice cream so good that will make you forget this ridiculous meandering ad copy. There are plenty of chances to win freebies and discounts when you sign up to Westfield Club. So Google Westfield London or Westfield Stratford City today. Join the club, claim your free ice cream, and then lose yourself in the wonder that is Muscles' 2007 album, Guns, Babes, Lemonade. There you go, Daniel Norcross.
Well, I mean, that might be your best effort yet, really.
Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, I'm not quite the target audience for for ice cream. I'm not really into sweet things. I'm more of an umami kind of guy. I mean, if they had a Marmite ice cream,
absolutely,
I'd consider it, or snail ice cream, which they might well. But most of my colleagues absolutely adore ice cream, and some of the finest cricketing minds in the world adore ice cream. If you're one of those finest cricketing minds and you don't have sensitive teeth like me and you aren't put off by sugar, get down there now.
I feel like if Shea Bruce did you an ice cream, you'd be into that. You'd really enjoy that. I think that could be your way into it.
Yeah, I normally have the cheese board at Shea Bruce.
The problems you face in life, Daniel. Right, give me a moment of your favourite moment of the day for the Hall of Fame.
Well, you've already mentioned one of them, which was the Crawley over, the 4-4-4-6, which was hilarious in its own way. But I can't see beyond... you've described Akash Deep's story, and it seems a bit mean of me to pick this moment, but the aesthetic beauty of his first non-wicket was so extreme. The way that the stump cartwheeled was delicious. It sort of went about five or six times. It was very watching Kirtley Ambrose and getting one to keep a bit low at Port of Spain, and the stumps just exploding. And the tragedy of it is, I mean, it's not a tragedy. Other things are far more tragic than that, but... The sadness of it is that we probably won't replay that over and over again. So I think it's important that the final word Hall of Fame keeps the spirit of that absolutely scintillating moment alive. That, for me, is wonderful. My Hall of Fame.
A sliding doors moment of beauty. There's something quite haunting about that. The idea that we've lost such a moment of ecstatic joy. Right, my to play into what you said earlier about being a man who's savoury over sweet, I completely agree. My Hall of Fame moment today, and I don't know if this is allowed, but it's actually the breakfast I had at Ranchi Cricket Stadium, which consisted of a sugar-laced chai, which was quite sweet, 4 biscuits and 8 fish fingers.
Wow.
Which were potentially the nicest fish fingers I've ever had in my life. I don't know if you're meant to start your day with deep-fried fish and... kind of like after, no, they went after 8, but they were kind of like nice biscuits, as in the brand. And I cannot wait to start my next 3 days of my life like that.
Did you get a nice little chutney that went? Because I mean, a good fish pakora is about the most delicious thing in the world. Was there a sort of like a minty sauce or anything?
Well, this is the thing, not required.
Ooh.
I'd be all for that. If there was a sauce there, I'd be like, yes, that would suit maybe some kind of, as you said, a chutney, a tartar sauce-esque. Acid to cut through the fat, all that nonsense. But no, just each bite got better and better. I gave one to my colleague to confirm.
How generous of you.
What I was experiencing was correct. I went, this is delicious, isn't it? And he went, oh my God, that's great. And I was like, yes, I'm going to go and get 10 more. I'll be back tomorrow with more fish fingers, and we'll be back tomorrow with more Final Word dailies. As ever, they brought to you by Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. Go and sign up to the Westfield Club. Get your free ice cream. Go and book a PT pod. Get a pump on. Get some muscles. Have some ice cream. What a day. England finish maybe in the ascendancy, maybe not. And that's why it's a good test match. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below or on Twitter, YouTube, wherever. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Protected, brother, I ain't fenced in. If my future questions my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out of empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go about it, write it out.